All right, the next matter on the court's docket is the Matthews versus Brinkhouse matter. Mr. Throop, Mr. O'Connor. Mr. Throop, if you want to come on up.
Thank you.
And sir, how much time would you like to reserve for your rebuttal?
3 minutes, please.
Okay. You may begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, judges. The case before us this morning is just one assignment of error standard of abuse of discretion, and very brief, simple, and clear on the facts. The facts are that the appellee filed a petition in the circuit court requesting that the court incorporate a parenting agreement that involved the nature and circumstances of a minor child and the custody arrangements to be changed under that parenting agreement under which they were prior to the court entering the agreement. Now, the error that we've assigned to the court is that the court refused to take into account the best interest of the child. That fact is undisputed in the appendix under section or paragraph 10. Furthermore, the concern we have here is that this parenting agreement was dated early of 2014. It was brought to the court in, I believe, October of 2016, more than 2.5 years after the parenting agreement had been entered into for entry. And during that time, the father, who was the petitioner in the lower court, had been convicted of second-degree assault of his minor child, the child involved in this case. And as part of the conditions of the father's probation, he was not to have any contact with this child for a period of 5 years, extending out to, I believe, December of 19.
And that's going to supersede anything in the parenting agreement, isn't it?
Say again?
That's going to supersede anything in the parenting agreement, isn't it?
We believe so, although one's a criminal court order and one's a civil court order, but we believe so, but that was, excuse me, that was not considered by the lower court. Because that was the argument for us was that the best interests of the child need to be considered. We've cited numerous cases. Furthermore, in Clowder v. Queen, we would say that the language, and I'll quote, custody determinations must be based upon the child's best interest as viewed under the circumstances existing at the time of the decision. So because of that language, we would argue that, yes, that would sort of trump and need to be incorporated and included in the court's consideration. But again, here, the court abused its discretion. It didn't consider the best interest of the child at all. The appellee's argument, which I'll get more into in rebuttal, is essentially that it didn't have to. But it cites no law, as far as I can tell, involving child custody where the court did not have to or was not required to consider the best interest of the child. I will say that under statute 20-109 in Gillum v. Wotton, which is cited in our brief, the trial court was not required under 20-10.9 to incorporate the agreement in total. Moreover, unlike agreements resolving property issues or spousal support, questions of custody must be made with the best interest of the child as the primary focus. This this agreement was simply entered into by the circuit court under 20-109.1 without any consideration of the best interest of the child. And again, that's clear in the facts. Furthermore, we are concerned at this point, and we've asked for a reversal, and we are concerned with any sort of remand back to the trial court on this matter. We're asking for simply a reversal of the order in full.
How does that impact on the status of the child?
Well, the status of the child would not change, and the agreement would never have been incorporated.
The child's with the mother.
The child's with the mother now, correct. And the reason we ask that is because, again, in Clotter v. Queen, and I'll quote, as long as the trial court examines the factor, it is not required to quantify or elaborate exactly what weight or consideration is given to each of the statutory factors. What we're concerned with, and rightfully so, we believe, because the trial court not once but twice refused to consider these factors, is going back and the trial court saying, yes, we consider the factors, and we consider it now the best interest of the child to enter.
But isn't that, even if we find that the incorporation is inappropriate, even if we find that the incorporation of the agreement is inappropriate, isn't the trial court still better suited to make the factual determinations of the best interest of the child?
Well, not if it's not before the court. Not if it's not before. There's already been a custody arrangement in place.
Okay.
Essentially, what this is a motion to amend an existing custody order based on material change in circumstance disguised as a petition under 20-10.9, when it should be a motion to amend an existing custody order. Again, our concern here is that if this parenting agreement were upheld by the court, I'll quote Brown v. Brown from 1999, cited in our brief, a party seeking to modify an existing order bears the burden of proving that a change in circumstances has occurred since the last custody determination, and that the circumstances warrant a change in custody to promote the children's best interests. What happens here is if the Court of Appeals upholds this, what they've done in the lower court is incorporated agreement dated early 2014. Ignored all the circumstances that may have changed and that in fact did change between then and 2016. Once they enter that order, the mother in this case would not be able to go back to the court and have the court consider all these things that the father did and that these things that the father was convicted of and the probation that the father is on with these circumstances of the probation to have no contact with the child. It would essentially take that 2014 order and forward it up to 2016, and the burden of proof would then be on the mother to show a material change in circumstances from that time. I think that's why the Clower Court specifically says that the best interest of the child must be considered at the time the order is entered. That's all I have. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Edward O'Connor. I represent the appellee, Stephen Brinkhouse. This matter was before the Circuit Court of Fairfax County on one issue on October 28, 2016. Mr. Brinkhouse requests that the court incorporate an amended parenting agreement entered into by the parties. Ms. Matthews was served with this notice 21 days prior to the hearing. At no time before October 28th, did she file any pleading with the court asking for any relief or attacking the agreement in any way? It wasn't until the motion had been made before the court that counsel stood up and objected on three bases. One, there was no statutory authority. Two, the court didn't have jurisdiction. And third, it wasn't in the child's best interest. Well, it's clear from the appendix and the record that the petition cites 20-109.1 as a reason to bring this matter to the court. So there is statutory authority. Both parties were before the court, so the court had jurisdiction. It was the court that had divorced the parties previously. There was no evidence concerning the allegations that this was not in the best interest of the child. There was only a statement made that it was not in the child's best interest. Ms. Matthews did not testify. Mr. Brinkhouse did not testify. There were no documents introduced into evidence. There was only an assertion that it was not in the child's best interest. Now, this court has held on many times that it's up to a party. If they want the court to consider the factors under a statute, particularly in family law, it's the burden is on the parties to produce the evidence to meet those factors so the court can make that consideration. Here we just have a bold-faced assertion, nothing more.
Well, don't we have arguably an error of law when the judge says, I refuse to consider the best interest of the child? Isn't that an error of law that doesn't have to be pled and requires no evidence?
No, because all it was an assertion, Your Honor, and if we take that theory that a party can come and say this is not in the best interest of the child.
I'm not sure the party had to say a word. Let's put that out as a hypothetical. You have a contract which changes the custodial arrangement of the child. It seems to me that it's inherent in the law without being asked to do so. The court must consider the best interest, period.
Well, that would require the court to go behind every agreement that has custody.
Well, I don't know about that, but...
As we know, that the nature of these agreements, nobody is 100% happy with them. They require compromise between the parties. Many times they're entered into at one point and then incorporated down the road.
They are.
Okay. Sometimes parties will enter in at the time they separate, and a year later, when they go through the uncontested divorce, they ask that the agreement be incorporated. Now, if someone could come in then a year later and say, well, I don't think it's in the child's best interest anymore.
I understand where you're going on that, and I think it's an important matter to...
Because otherwise the circuit courts would have one thing only to consider, and that would be custody agreements.
It's an interesting issue that I'm not going to pursue. I could tell you a lot of good reasons why I think that probably ought to be done, but I don't think the court should necessarily rubber stamp every custody agreement. That's not the law.
Well, even here on the face...
I hear you, but...
I'm sorry.
In this case... Mother did object to the incorporation of the agreement, but it was only at trial, is what you're...
There was no trial.
Well, it was only...
It was a Friday motion.
All right. It was at a hearing.
Correct.
Okay. That's it. But she did object to it.
But put on no evidence.
Only at the hearing, but the court was put on notice that the mother had some concern and did not agree with the motion. Isn't that enough to get the issue before the court?
Without evidence, I don't see how.
Well, I understand there's no evidence. However, where I started with our little dialogue is that I think there's an error of law that is lurking out there that does not require us to simply affirm, because the error of law, clearly what happens is, if we think it is an error of law, that is, if that's what we...
I don't believe it's an error of law.
Well, if we were to conclude that, it would have to be reversed.
I understand, and then it would have to go back to the court, and then would have to have a consideration of whether the agreement would be appropriate or not. But I think, based upon the allegations, that the court did not consider the best interest of the child because they alleged the father had abused the child. This was an agreement that changed custody from the father to the mother. And so, even on its face, it's in the child's best interest because prior to that, the arrangement had been that the father had sole custody or primary custody of the child. So, it's clearly on the child's, based upon the allegations, in the child's best interest there. And so, based upon what the court had before it, that's the information it had. And so, I don't see how the court could be considered to have abused its discretion or not considered the best interest of the child when the allegation is the father's done something wrong and the mother's getting the custody. And it provides in the agreement for supervised visitation, and therapy. So again, everything is focused on the child and the agreement there. So I don't, even on its face, I don't think the court can say that the trial court abused its discretion to incorporate the agreement.
Counsel, one of the cases you rely on is the Forrest case, which is really an integration of a property settlement. How is that applicable? Aren't you taking it and applying it beyond what we would have in reference to a custody situation? Because with custody, best interest of the child always has to be considered.
Well, no, but in the arena of family law, many times a property settlement agreement will include custody provisions. And so, looking as a family law practitioner, many agreements encompass a number of different support, custody, property division.
But the agreement's never permanent when it comes to a child.
Correct. I mean, the court always has the opportunity to modify.
In fact, the court has to take the best interest of the child into consideration, though.
Correct, based upon a material change in circumstance.
Right.
And that's the second tier that the court has to consider is the best interest of the child. First, it has to find that there's been a material change in circumstance. But no one here asked the court to change the custody. All it was asked was to incorporate an agreement, and an agreement is still a contract. So it's also a contract that could be enforced under contract law. So there's nothing in case law that says custody agreements aren't given the same, aren't looked at the same way as contracts in other areas of law.
But you, I mean, your handle on that in terms of looking at procedural, the procedural posture that most cases are in is that in this case, not only is it a contract, but the issue of best interest was not raised.
Correct.
And these contracts that come in ad infinitum in the circuit court that have exactly all of those provisions from property to custody and visitation.
Correct.
The issue of best interest is never raised.
Never in any divorce or even sometimes when there's
that
a mediated modification
of
custody.
They're handed up and they're incorporated.
The judge will sign it as quickly as possible.
Right. And your argument is if every judge had to look behind that agreement for best interest, we would be in a rather procedural morass of complications.
Correct.
However, that's the question here. I think it's arguable, but I want to hear a little bit more about it, that the best interest issue was raised. Certainly the judge said, I'm not doing it.
The judge just said, I deny.
I'm not going to look at the best interest. So
there was never a request to look at it. They just said it was not in the best. It was just a statement that this is not in the best interest of the child, period. We want to put on evidence. We want to have a hearing. We want to determine the court to determine that. It was just, we say it's not in the child's best interest.
Well, take that as a way of raising it, maybe not very artfully, but maybe not. Maybe that's not really fair. So I hear what your argument is. I thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, thank you.
I wholeheartedly disagree with counsel that the best interests of the child is somehow arbitrary or up to the court whether or not they want to take that into consideration. Counsel talks about this being a contract and this falling under sort of some contract law, and that the court has been presented with this contract and they're just going to sort of endorse this contract. I'm going to read from Mattingly v. McChrystal, which is also cited in my brief. The court may revise and alter such a decree concerning the care, custody, and maintenance of the children and make a new decree concerning the same as the circumstances of the parties and the benefit of the children may require. That's under 2108. But the determinant factor in the trial court's decision to alter visitation is whether or not it's in the best interest of the child to do so. Indeed, the power of the court to act in this manner is unaffected by any contract entered into between, in this case, husband and wife. The trial court is free to adopt a visitation schedule not proposed by either parent because to limit a chancellor's remedy to only the visitation arrangement requested by one of the parents would unduly restrict his or her options and allow a parent to circumvent the statutory obligation of the chancellor to determine visitation based only upon the best interests of the child. It's very clear here, judges, it's very clear that there's a statutory obligation of the trial court to determine any change, and it must be based on the best interests of the child. Second of all, no evidence was put on in the trial court because I was not allowed to put any evidence on in the trial court. And we filed a motion to reconsider, and we incorporated the law into that motion, and it was, again, simply sort of ipsy-dixit ignored. No, we're not gonna do it. We're not going to consider it. Appellee says the court has an opportunity to modify and seems to sort of say that it's not required. Again, I go back to Mattingly v. Crystal. The statutory obligation is to determine visitation based only upon the best interests of the child. And although this case talks about visitation, Brown v. Brown, 2006, decided in the same year of Mattingly v. Crystal, I'll quote, when determining which parent should have custody, the trial court must decide what is in the best interest of the child, and it is required to do so. It is required to consider the factors listed in 20-124.3. In this case, the trial court didn't consider the contract at all. And again, it's not whether or not the trial court could decide whether or not they want to take a look past the contract. It's specific that the trial court has a duty. They have a statutory and legal obligation to look in the best interest of the child. Just because the practice isn't that way all the time doesn't mean that it's now okay and that they no longer have the obligation. If the trial court doesn't fulfill their obligations and they rubber stamp, so to speak, these visitation arrangements, well, that's some other case for some other time in some other court. That's not the case here today.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I see a piece of the statutory language that I hadn't really focused on much until this argument because it's been some very interesting considerations, but it's the last phrase or two under 1091. And it says basically that, as we've been arguing, the court may incorporate on all these issues, and then it goes on, concerning the custody and maintenance of minor children or establishing or imposing any other consideration, monetary or non-monetary. I haven't seen any of that language ever reviewed in terms of whether it relates to the kind of consideration that we've been talking about here, establishing or imposing, right, the court, any other consideration, monetary or non-monetary. Here, the non-monetary consideration would be the best interest of the child. This is not to suggest to the cases you cited are not relevant or important. But since so much of the focus is on the 1091 requirement of that, well, it's not even a requirement, there's discretion as to whether to incorporate an agreement. The issue is whether in doing it is the court required, right? I wonder if that language itself doesn't say the court has, I don't know about duty, but certainly statutory authority to establish or impose another consideration.
I'm not sure I quite understand.
It hasn't been briefed. I just raise it out for you to think about maybe in the future if this comes up again, depending on how we decide the case. And also, Yeah, for opposing counsel, and both good family law lawyers. I think it's an interesting issue and needs to be resolved in a way that gives guidance to the bar.
We appreciate that, Judge. I think that in light of the issue or the thing that you raised, and if I understand you correctly, under 20-109.1, as long as the court does something that's not inconsistent with current case law, which says over and over again that there's a duty to consider the best interest of the child under any custody agreement, I think that I would agree with you, but I think that it would also be somewhat ancillary to what we're talking about here today.
I think your argument goes along that line of cases. I'm not suggesting it's improper or not relevant or maybe not even, I'm not saying it's not even determinative. I just think it's an interesting aspect of the 109.1 statutory requirements.
And also, hopefully, something that the court can resolve and find and reconcile with the current case law. I also want to mention, and this was not in the appendix, but we found this in the trial folder, in the court folder. There was also a 2014 order that was entered and apparently vacated in 2014 as well, incorporating this very agreement. I don't know what weight or the court wants to give it, but it is in the court file. And we didn't actually have notice of it until after this appeal was filed. We weren't allowed to see the court file at the Judge Field or at the Fairfax Court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. We're going to come down and greet counsel.